efficacy apologetics and why should you care? Let's talk about it with Rusty Wright on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And we are so glad you're here. You always have a place at our table. I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. In a moment, we'll speak with our guest and my old friend, Rusty Wright. Hey, speaking of old and rusty, Eric Guzman is here.
What? What?
It is Eric, right?
Oh. I don't know if I'm going to come back again and take this kind of abuse.
Yeah.
I don't need you to abuse me. I've got plenty of people trying to abuse me.
And Matthew Porter is here with us because, well, why not? And our producer, Jinx, is working hard in the little glass booth. He's still just $50 away from being ordained.
I can have it done before the end of the show.
Our video director, John Myers, is in the tech bunker. John fixes things, does IT, and gets us free cable.
What?
We normally don't admit that.
What's that?
That's illegal. Right?
Yeah. So I've heard.
That voice was the voice of Dr. George Bingham. He's the president of Key Life. With his mind on the money and the money on his mind. Sounds like a rap joke.
Yeah. But I don't mind more money at all.
At the bit.
No.
I don't mind.
And Kathy Wyatt, of course, is the soft feminine side of the program. Kathy arranges my speaking schedule. That means she tells me where I can go.
Oh, my.
Sometimes.
Does often.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but we're not going into that.
But we're
that
not going to get into that, are we?
I'm in a mess you wouldn't believe because I didn't listen to Kathy, but listen.
Oh, boy.
You, Steve, really? No.
I always listen. I'm compliant, gentle, easy to live with.
Except,
obedient yep to powers.
You know, I
but one time
one
I
time
blow it.
One time.
Yeah, sure, one time.
Had one
to,
time.
Had to press the cough button on that one.
It was already bad when you could hear. And now that you've lost your hearing, not only do you not listen, yeah, you don't hear.
It is horrific. Listen,
it's so much better that way. Trust me on this.
Now you have an excuse. You're like, what? Huh?
Yeah, I didn't hear you. Rusty Wright, by the way, is an award-winning author, lecturer, syndicated columnist, spoken on six continents to audiences, including academics, business, and government leaders, and university students. Rusty has appeared on TV talk shows in cities around the world and also trains professionals in effective communication.
That sounds like you, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Really does. We're gonna talk. We could talk to Rusty about a lot of things. And he really has profound insights. But we picked from a list of opportunities to talk about advocacy apologetics. Rusty, why don't we start by you telling us, because there are people who are listening and watching who have no idea what apologetics is.
People sitting in chairs in this studio?
They don't either. So you got to start and keep the fodder down low. And I'm assuming advocacy apologetics means you have no convictions. But we'll get to that in a minute. You go back to it. Tell us what apologetics is.
Yeah, apologetics basically means defending a position. So if you're a member of the Communist Party and you're out promoting communism and defending it, you can be an apologist for communism or for another philosophy. And so a Christian apologist is someone who seeks to defend the faith. And the approach I try to take is to try to, explain clearly to people in ways that would interest them and in ways that would be sensitive why Christianity makes sense. So that's basically what an apologist is. Doesn't mean you're apologizing for your perspective, but it means you're defending your position.
We're so sorry about all the Christians. You're so sorry.
I am assuming that advocacy apologetics means you shouldn't say you're going to hell and I'm going to tell you why and then prove it to you to your satisfaction so you can be like me. It doesn't work that way.
You're right. In other words, if you want to communicate biblical principles, my approach is to try to do it nicely. And it's not always easy because there are all kinds of difficult things, that people would have to grapple with, whether it's, morality in this life or relationships or eternity or whatever. But the approach I'm trying to get at is that, when I was growing up, the things that were applauded in me as a young man were athletic and academic achievement. And after I became a follower of Jesus my freshman year in college, I began to learn more about how the Christian faith had a lot of evidence to support it. And the university I was attending, Duke, was, highly intellectual. And so we'd get into all kinds of disputes with fraternity brothers, people on campus and so forth. And it's very easy to focus on just arguing and trying to, prove your point. And it took me a number of years to realize that my goal was not necessarily to win an argument, but it was to win a person. And so I wanted to change my approach, not to compromise on the biblical truth, but to try to focus on being an advocate for them, to find points of common ground at the beginning where I could get on their side of the table and agree with them where I could, and that could perform or provide a basis for communication to talk about areas of disagreement. So by advocacy, I mean just trying to find some points of agreement at the beginning and starting there rather than just starting with in your face, here's where we disagree.
And so, Steve, is this why you would assume that he has no convictions? When you hear the word advocacy, it's coming to points of agreement. That's important, right?
Well, sometimes it is, unless it's a radical Muslim with a sword. Then all of this that we're going to learn today on this broadcast is out the window. At that point, apologetics is heels and elbows running as fast as you can in the other direction. This started with a guy you heard in Korea and back in years ago, and you started thinking this way. Tell us about that.
Yes, it was quite a fascinating experience. I was at a conference called Expo 74 in 1974 in Seoul, Korea. And in the middle, on Yeouido Island, in the middle of a river in Seoul, there were about 1 million believers there, most from Korea and other parts of Asia, but also others from different parts of the world. And this was a Methodist bishop from India who was talking about ways that he would try to influence the types of Buddhists that were common in his country. And he said there are two ways you could do it. One is you could start out by talking about the differences between Christianity and Buddhism. But he said, and I'm just paraphrasing him here, but he said basically that'd get everybody mad. So he said a better approach is to try to find points of agreement. And so this is my paraphrase of what he said. He said, as a Christian speaking to Buddhists, he would say, you Buddhists believe in four noble truths. The first truth is that suffering is universal. Well, as a follower of Jesus, I believe that there's all kinds of suffering everywhere, and we need to do what we can to alleviate it. He said the second noble truth you believe in is that suffering is caused by craving or evil desire. And I would say, as a follower of Jesus, that certainly fits in a lot of ways with my model of human nature, is that there's a desire, a selfishness that people have to want what they want and to get what they want. And then the third noble truth, he would say, is that the way to eliminate suffering is to eliminate craving. And I would have to say, I agree. As a follower of Jesus, I would say that one aspect of this craving we would call sin. And if you can eliminate craving, you can eliminate a lot of suffering. And the fourth noble truth is that the way to eliminate suffering is by the Eightfold Path, which basically means right belief, right behavior, right actions, right words, etc. And as a follower of Jesus, this is where I would take a slightly different tack, because I found that for many years, I tried to live a good life, to have good attitudes, good actions, and so forth. But I found that I couldn't really do it on the inside and on the outside a lot of times. And then some friends in college explained to me that I could know God personally by asking Jesus, who died for me and rose again, to enter my life and forgive me and give me power on the inside. And then he could give me the inner strength to be the kind of person I wanted to be. And so basically, as this bishop was talking about this to these million people, it looked to me like there were two different approaches. The first one has the effect of sort of putting your hands up in a stop, go away motion. And then the other one is your hands more, I can't really see on the video here, but open, more welcoming to say, yes, I agree with you in many points. So that's basically what it was. And I'm really glad I learned that lesson early on, because my career's been spent dealing with skeptics and cynics and people who don't care a whole lot about faith. So that's in a nutshell what I learned.
We're going to talk about that. It's Rusty Wright. And if you have some friends who are not believers, and if you don't, you're doing it wrong. If you have some friends who are not believers, you're going to get some helpful information and instruction. Usually Rusty charges for this, and he's doing it for you free today. So be very thankful and learn something and then apply it. And after you have led thousands to Christ, brag about it, because there is a lot to be said for self-righteousness. Hey, like Jesus, we're coming back.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
We're talking with Rusty Wright. He's an award-winning author, and he's been everywhere and done it all. And we're talking about apologetics, which is the defense of the Christian faith. And Rusty has done it the right way, and he's done it the wrong way, and he's discovered a way that really does open doors, and he calls it advocacy apologetics. In the last segment, he explained what that meant. Agree when you can, identify when you can, and then when the time comes, speak your truth.
Rusty, as you were talking in the last segment about that, it occurred to me that this has happened often in my life, that I have taken this approach of advocacy apologetics, but in finding the commonalities and pointing out these places where there's agreement, I've often found people go, yeah, okay, so we're not all that different. All the faiths are pretty much the same. And then you end up getting ignored and pushed into a place where you have to kind of then get a little bit more aggressive. And have you found that in your work, that people, when you start finding these commonalities, like it actually stalls the process out rather than starting with, this is unique, this is different. I mean, I've got a Trinity and I've got unconditional acceptance and the cross and resurrection and all these great things that nobody else has. You know what I mean? It's like, does it stall it sometimes?
It really depends on the situation a lot of times from what I've seen. Sometimes you run out of time. In other words, I've done lots of media interviews where you might have, 5 minutes to present your perspective. And if I spend the first 4 minutes agreeing, I maybe run out of time to, explain the points of disagreement that I might wish to, or in a conversation, or if you're on a bus or an airplane or whatever. But I basically like the idea of starting by agreeing where I can, but it's only a starting point because eventually you've got to get to the points of disagreement there. And that sometimes agreeing is necessary to diffuse hostility. I spent a lot of my career traveling and lecturing in university classrooms around the world, and I would speak on controversial subjects like sex or relationships or apologetics, life after death, things like that. And a lot of times you'd find people, the last words before I'd get up to speak, the professor would say, and he represents this Christian organization. And sometimes you could just see the, defenses go up. So I'd start by using humor, and then I'd try to agree with them where I could. And then I would move into the points of disagreement. But it takes discipline. It takes time management to do it. And yes, there is that risk that somebody, if the person you're trying to share your faith with, if they bug out of the conversation before you've had a chance to explain what you want, there is that risk. But I guess because I've spent so much time dealing with people who initially believe they disagree with me, or they, when they think of an evangelical Christian, they think of somebody that's closed-minded, that's going to club them over the head. I try to do what I can to earn their respect and earn their confidence at the beginning.
Do you ever come to that place where when you don't get to the differences, you feel like, well, maybe there was a work that just needed to be done in diffusing some of what you just talked about, these negative perceptions. And then you did this work, and then you found these commonalities, you expressed these commonalities, and then people go away. You didn't get to challenging them, but hey, maybe there's another guy that's going to come along, like a kind of a holistic approach where we don't have to feel guilty that we didn't get to the next part.
That's a very, very good part. And God, is in control, and he can bring somebody along later to help finish the job or to help communicate, things that needed to be communicated. I remember once a guy that had written an article I wrote about resurrection evidences, and he emailed me and was just blasting me. He said he used to be an evangelical Christian, and then he realized it was all fake, and so he just didn't like all this stuff at all. And so I tried to use, first of all, the intellectual approach in my response to him, and I would email evidences, and he'd come back, sort of complaining about that and said, oh, I've heard that all before, and it's just all hogwash, and none of it makes any sense, and it's brainwashing. And so then I tried the spiritual approach, and I would maybe just share some scriptures with him in my email. And he came back angry at that and said, oh, no, this Bible just makes no sense at all. And so finally, what I decided to do was to try the emotional intelligence approach. And I explained to him about how my faith had helped me. And I told him that in 1996 was a terrible year for me. My wife of 20 years divorced me in a 2-week period. My wife of 20 years divorced me. My employer of 25 years showed me the door, and I had a cancer scare. And my life was just spinning out of control. And then a good friend contacted me, and he said, remember, there's this statement in the book of Romans in the New Testament, says God causes all things to work together for good to those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. And my friend had told me that that verse hasn't been repealed yet. Well, as soon as I got into that, opening my heart with him, he just really opened up. His next email was, oh, I'm so sorry about this difficulty. And, you can make it and you can survive this. And so I didn't end up getting to talk about lots more about things that he might need to hear to, nudge him back to faith. But it helped open some doors perhaps for somebody in the future.
Rusty, there's a phrase that we use in marketing and advertising, and show me you know me. So you want to sell me something, help me get that you know where I'm coming from and you feel my pain. And that feels like a lot of what you're talking about here with this approach. It's like, look, we could talk about stuff, but first help me understand that you can identify with some of this. And, it seems like the difference maker might be in relationships, right? If it's just, if I have like 5 or 10 minutes with you, then you've got to kind of try to establish that rapport and get to the stuff, versus if you're in a relationship with somebody, it seems like less of a pressure, less of an intellectual hit and run kind of thing. And I can spend more time letting you kind of see me in the ups and downs and, you know.
Laying the groundwork.
Yeah, and just letting your guard down is like, oh, you drink bourbon from a sippy cup standing in front of the sink? I can identify with that, you know. So, but is the relationship kind of a differentiator there?
It really can be, I would say. I mean, every situation, I don't want to say they're all unique, but a lot of them are different from each other. I remember sitting on a plane. I think I was flying from Newark to California, and the man beside me asked what I did, and I told him I was a speaker and writer. Oh, what do you speak and write about? So I told him some of the things, and I got into spiritual things a little bit. Oh, do you have anything that could explain this more? And I said, well, I've got this little 4-point outline of the teachings of Jesus. And so I read him the little booklet, and he ended up praying to receive Christ. And he said, well, and his next thought was, well, do you have any more literature, anything more I could do? Or he said, I live in Boston. Do you have any groups that I could? So there was a guy who was ripe and ready. But not everybody's like that. You know, others have said, they just don't have interest in talking about it. Or when they do get interested, they'll talk about, a Christian that did them wrong. I did my graduate work on Sigmund Freud and why he was this famous psychiatrist, and why he was so angry with Christians. And a lot of it was because a lot of Christians treated people. Yeah. So it just all depends on the situation and the religion.
Well, just so you know, I think Freud was a fruitcake. I think he saw everything through the eyes. I'm sure you would say it academically and better than I have. Nevertheless, Freud was a fruitcake. He was obsessed with sex and cigars. It'll kill you every time. Guys, we got to back out, but we're coming back. Don't go anyplace.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Talking with Rusty Wright. Rusty, if we wanted to find some more about Rusty Wright Ministries, where would we go?
The easiest place would be our website, rustywright.com, rustywright.com. A lot of my writing on different issues, such as the things we're talking about today, different types of communicating faith to people who don't know Jesus. And also a lot of recent stuff, too, is about films. I try to use current films as springboards to talk about important life issues, whether it's forgiveness or death or relationships or whatever. So rustywright.com.
All right. Write that down.
Rusty, sort of a follow-up to Matthew's point of, from a marketing perspective, for example, show me that you know me. But even perhaps another step beyond that is the showing that you care about me in this advocacy approach. So you don't run the risk of sort of communicating to somebody that, well, I'm just, either I like this kind of conflict type discussion, or I'm putting another notch on my belt by convincing you or something like that. What role does that play in it?
There's a lot of temptation, I would say, for people who know their stuff to want to win an argument, to want to put a notch on their belt, to want to have some sort of recognition or achievement or self-satisfaction that they've convinced somebody else, or that they've at least presented the case that demolishes the other person's. I know I've had that problem myself, just in terms of wanting to maybe please myself or please others and how I perform like that. But I think it's really, really important to understand why we're doing this. We're communicating our faith to those outside the faith because Jesus told us to, but also because he's the answer to life's problems. I mean, he's the one that brings forgiveness. He gives us peace of mind. He brings the Holy Spirit. And in my 50-some years as a follower of Jesus, I've asked God to give me a great, great love for people who don't know him. And one of the ways that I've been able to communicate that is by trying to identify with them and trying to understand when they're talking about their own hurts. You know, after I went through my terrible experience in 1996 with all the pain, I was very hesitant to speak about it. And then friends encouraged me to talk about it tactfully. And I began to, and I found that it just connected with audiences emotionally in ways that I'd not understood. It was like I had a new pipeline to people's hearts. And the divorcees would come up afterwards, of course, and talk and want to know more. But anybody who had been hurt, whether it's a job-related issue or a family conflict or disappointment in school or whatever, they seemed to have the idea that, you know, I've been open with them, and maybe they can be open with me and find some solace there. So I would say emotional intelligence is extremely important in communicating the gospel and understanding and identifying with people like that.
Rusty, before the break, you talked a little bit about a specific instance where you were on a plane, and obviously that gentleman was, you know, there's no way to know what kind of action or whatever had been taken by another person or other people in his life to prepare him for that moment. And maybe it was nothing, you know, maybe it was just the way God intended for it to happen with him. But do you see yourself more often than not as the one who's there kind of like as the planter, the one that's putting the seed in the ground and that maybe you are not? I guess I'm asking you if you can kind of look back over the years and say, most of the time, are you the one that's preparing, and then you step back and you let God, you know, bring about whatever he's going to do in order to bring this person to himself? Or do you feel like you're seeing an equal amount of both, where you're actually the one who gets to be there when a person comes to faith? And the reason I'm asking that is because years and years and years ago, when I was a kid, there was a missionary who came to a conference at a church where I grew up and was talking about a situation where some missionaries that they knew had been on the field for 20 or 25 years and had not seen anyone come to know Christ. And it was very, very, you know, discouraging to them. And they left and came home and someone else went. And all of a sudden things, you know, began to happen. People were coming to know Christ. And of course, it was obviously explained that all of these years of working with these people and preparation and feeding into their lives were obviously in some ways responsible for what had transpired later on. So I'm just wondering if there's some similarity with that.
I think there is. I've seen both happen, actually. My junior year at Duke, I was a psychology major, and I wrote a paper for an abnormal psych course about a biblical therapy for anxiety. And I'd seen God resolve anxiety issues in my life a lot. And so just to see what would happen, I sent a copy of it to the author of our textbook, James Coleman, a prominent clinical psychologist at UCLA. And he surprised me by writing back, and he said he'd like the paper and was going to read it to his students, and he asked permission to quote from it in his textbook revision. Well, I was startled, and first thing I did was send a copy of his letter home to my parents in Miami, and got off the deep end. But basically, I finished the story. I had a chance to meet him that summer at his home.
Hey, Rusty, why don't you hold it right there, and we'll do the rest of the story on the other side of trying to make a buck. Rusty Wright is our guest, and he's a teacher in a lot of subjects that we could talk about, but we have honed in on apologetics. How do you speak to a world if you're a Christian and everybody thinks you're crazy? And we're getting some good teaching for free, okay? up in the mountains where there were lots of fireflies. I'd catch them and put them in a jar. Problem was, the next morning, they'd be dead. Jesus said to the religious people of his day that they would travel land and sea to get one convert, then make him worse than he was before. We do that sometimes. We put new Christians in a jar of rules and regulations, and their light grows dimmer and dimmer, and then they die. Christians, like fireflies, need to be free. Don't forget about God's unconditional love and forgiveness, and your light will shine. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Hey, share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. We're talking with Rusty Wright, and be sure and check out rustywright.com. The Wright is with a W-W-R-I-G-H-T. And if you can't spell Rusty, you need to go back to school. We're cool. And Eric has left us. Rusty's been talking about advocacy apologetics, and obviously he failed with Eric. Eric said, I'm out of here. You offended him, Rusty. No, actually you didn't. Hey, before the break, you were telling a story about at Duke. You'd written, your major was psychology, and you had written a paper about Jesus, and you sent it to a pagan, for all you knew, psychologist. Tell us the rest of that story.
Yes, this was Dr. James Coleman, a psychology prof at UCLA, and he wrote back and said he liked the paper, read it to his students, and asked permission to quote from it in his textbook. And at that point, I sent a copy of it off to my parents in Miami so they'd know their son hadn't totally gone off the deep end with this Christian group I was involved with. But I had a chance to meet him that summer at his home in Malibu and shared the gospel with him, and he accepted Christ. And he said, you know, I've heard this message many times. He said, my dad was a minister, but I've just never understood how to, you know, begin a relationship with Christ. And so we talked a little bit more after that, and I kept in touch with him. And the next edition of his textbook had a short portion about religion and psychotherapy, and it had part of my faith story in it. So that's one of the ways that I kind of got jump-started on the lecture circuit. I would go to psych profs and tell them I was a case in this abnormal psychology textbook, and they'd let me speak. But that's an example in answer to Kathy's question about sowing versus reaping. There was a situation where I did both. By God's grace, I've been, you know, on six continents and seen loads and loads of people come to Christ, either in person or in meetings. But also, because of my interest in communicating with skeptics, I realized that sometimes the situation does not allow you to, you know, present everything you'd like to do or completely explain the gospel or ask for decision. And so sometimes it's more sowing. And so really, I just try to, you know, go to the places where God opens the doors and do what seems to be most appropriate.
Rusty, you have definitely inspired me to do the same thing that you have, to gain a friend who lives in Malibu. that's my takeaway. So, you know, it's funny. I was checking out your website this week, and you see all these really thoughtful articles and all these movie reviews. I'm like, oh, kind of, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. What I see now really is those things are absolutely connected, these possible points of connection to others. And story just kind of opens those doors. A couple weeks ago, a little bit ago, we interviewed somebody who had a book on the Netflix series Stranger Things. And, you know, the possible gospel parallels there. I'm curious to know if there's any films that you've seen or TV shows within the last year or so, whenever, that kind of invite that kind of same conversation that has some little strains of gospel in them.
Absolutely. In fact, one that just the timing of when this is going to be aired will affect how people interpret this, but it's the movie 1917 that is Oscar nominated, and we'll know when we hear this whether it won or not. It's a very, very powerful story. story about two British soldiers who were on a mission to try to get a life-saving message in World War I to some troops, British troops, who think that they're ready to attack the Germans and have them on the run and are going to win, and really they're marching into a trap because the Germans have regrouped and are about to slaughter them. And so it's very powerful. It's not a Christian movie. There's just a little bit of spiritual influence in it. But the point is that the thing I tried to focus on in my article is what would you do? What risks would you take to save another person's life? And try to get people thinking about that. And as you follow these guys all along their perilous journey, fascinating movie, that's the question that I was asking. So what I try to do, I found I could get a lot more people to read my articles if I wrote about current movies than if I wrote about current events or philosophy or politics or whatever. So that's why the big movie emphasis. And then we're able to, you know, piggyback on the studios as they put millions of dollars into publicity. We, by God's grace, able to see the films early and then have the article come out the week before the movie comes out and ride their publicity wave. But my purpose is not so much to do a review of the movie, but to use it as a springboard to talk about important life issues. And so that would be one that I would really encourage people to you know, to look at. They can read the article on our website and consider whether they'd want to go see it. But that's a current example that comes to mind.
That's awesome.
Rusty, you've been doing this all your life. I mean, you obviously care about those who don't know Christ. Why?
You know, I think
don't
a big
you have, don't you have a day job, or is there something you could do? Or, I mean, why do you spend so much of your life and your time and your commitment and your passion to those who don't know Christ?
I think it's really because of a flame that got lit when I was a freshman there at Duke. I was a member of a brand name church in Miami, became a member when I was age 11, went off to boarding school in Connecticut, did very well there in sports and academics, but then made some poor decisions my junior year that almost got me expelled. So when I got to Duke, I was kind of reeling. And I ran into these Christian students who had a love and joy and enthusiasm that I really appreciated. I didn't believe the Jesus stuff. I kept going back to the meetings because there were attractive young women there and because I liked the students. But as I understood grace and understood that I couldn't work my way to heaven, that Christ could enter me and forgive me and give me eternal life, I saw such a powerful change inside and out that I just wanted to share it with other people. So I think that's been a big part of what it is. Of course, there's the Great Commission. You know, the Lord wants us to do that. But he's really given me a love for people, especially that don't know him. I mean, I thank God for Christians. I thank God for, well, most of them, at least some of them. I,
and you want to name some?
Well, no. But although I did have to practice being irreverent, I knew I was coming on your show, and it doesn't come naturally to Steve. So I had to practice a little bit. But no, I think it's really just, you know, these people are not my enemies. They are people who don't know God and who need God. And I've got something that can help them. And by God's grace, he's blessed that over the years. I mean, I get emails from people who, you know, say 25 years ago, you spoke at the University of Virginia and I gave my life to Christ. And I just read in a book that I should, you know, thank the people that influenced me. And so they will write me an email. And I, you know, am very grateful for that. So, but really, it's, you know, God has just given me a love for people who don't know him.
And by the way, I think that's natural for the Christian. I think I can say forever that I don't care, that I don't give a rip. Millions are going to hell, and I don't even know their name. But that's a lie. Down deep, I really do care. Or I wouldn't be doing this, nor would you. And Rusty, we're so glad you're doing what you're doing and that you'd spend some time with us. We're going to have you back and talk about movies. Would that be okay?
That would be fun. I'd love it.
I don't want to hear about war movies. I want to hear about sex and stuff like that.
We'll do stuff like that. I'll get my Steve Brown movie list together and make sure everybody wants.
Go to RustyWright.com if you'd like more of what you've experienced today on this program. Rusty is a very wise man who's been doing this a long time, and you can learn from him as we have today. Rusty, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here, Steve.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
That was a good, hour with Rusty. We've been friends longer than a lot of you guys have been alive. And he has constantly manifested that passion for those who don't know Christ and has followed up and learned how to do it. And there are a lot of people you're going to meet in heaven because of him. You know, what I said to him is, I think, true. You know, we don't do this because you have to do, or God's going to take your crown away if you don't, or your pastor's going to be upset. He told you ought to do it if you were a real Christian after all that Jesus did for you. All of that is nonsense. That's not what this thing is all about. The truth is that you smell like Jesus, and as you stay with him, you begin to think like him. And he cared. I mean, I wouldn't have left my throne. I mean, I had all these angel servants. I could have done what I wanted to do, eat what I wanted to do, rest when I wanted to rest. But he didn't. And the more you hang out with Jesus, the more you find yourself in that kind of position. And so if you're a Christian, listen to what Rusty said. Go to his website and read some of the advice that he gives on advocacy apologetics, and then show. Just show. You know, the trouble is we hang out with each other and we become a lump of leaven. And, a lump of leaven doesn't do anybody any good. It just is a lump of leaven. We got to be where they are. We got to show. You got to show up in pop culture. You got to show up in academia. You got to show up in 1,000 different places. The clubs that pagans run, the recreation that they enjoy, the things that they do. And if you're a Christian, you show, because there's something to be said about smelling like Jesus when you can't help it. And it doesn't have anything to do with your goodness or your obedience or your spirituality. That's not why you smell like Jesus. You smell like Jesus because Paul said, I'm crucified with Christ. That's not a command. It's a fact. Therefore, I live. But it's really Jesus. And he's not saying do something to get there. It says you are there. So for God's sake, show up. You'll be surprised what happens. And even if you don't want us to, we're going to show up next week. Same time, same place, and we hope that you do too. And between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that gives you a wide, wide berth.